Good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. Find us on the internet at www.commonwealthclub.org. I'm Ann Clark, co-chair of the Environment and Natural Resources member-led forum at the Commonwealth Club. I will be your chair for this evening's program, Paddle to the Sea, a wonderful river adventure on the Tuolumne River with the Tuolumne River Trust. It is my pleasure to introduce Jessie Rader, who is going to speak to us first, and she's the director of the Paddle to the Sea program. And later we will be joined by Eric Wesselman, who is the executive director of the Tuolumne Trust. So please welcome Jessie, and we'll welcome Eric when he comes.
Thank you very much, Ann, and thanks for setting this up. And thanks, everybody, for coming tonight on tax day. So I assume everybody's rushing home to start their taxes after this. So thank you very much for taking one last hour before that. So we're here today to talk about Paddle to the Sea, which, and I am the director of Paddle to the Sea, and I also wear another hat at the Tuolumne River Trust, and that's that I work on our campaign called Let It Flow, which is our campaign to try to get more water released into the river for fish and wildlife and recreation. So one of the things that I love best about Paddle to the Sea is that it's our greatest organizing tool to really build grassroots support for that campaign. So you'll hear me talk about that quite a bit as well during this presentation. So just a brief introduction to the Tuolumne River Trust. We consider ourselves to be the voice for the river. We seek a healthy and vibrant river that's teeming with fish and wildlife, safe for drinking, fishing, and swimming, and held in trust for our children and grandchildren. Paddle to the Sea is our annual four-week journey down the Tuolumne River from just outside Yosemite National Park all the way to San Francisco Bay. As you can see, it involves many types of boating as we go down the river on this 241-mile journey. And there's a little map of the Tuolumne River watershed there, so you can see it starts up in Yosemite National Park. There's the famous Hetch Hetchy Reservoir in the park. Goes down through the Central Valley. There's another reservoir called Don Pedro you can see on that map. And then goes through the Central Valley past the town of Modesto, where it joins the San Joaquin River and flows north up into the San Francisco Bay Delta. So every year we're on the Tuolumne River with Paddle to the Sea, and this year we are also bringing Paddle to the Sea to the American River and the Merced River. So we're very excited about that. It's the first year we've expanded Paddle to the Sea past just our watershed. We have giant dreams of one day, boats coming down from the headwaters of all 13 rivers that flow into the San Francisco Bay Delta, meeting up in the Delta and heading out to the bay together. So we're starting small with just adding two. Paddle to the Sea is a paddle-a-thon. Participants all raise money and awareness to help protect and restore the Tuolumne River. So when you sign up, you get a little website. It's like a walkathon or a bike-a-thon or something like that, and people can reach out to their friends and family and let them know why they care about the river and invite them to sponsor them. And all of those sponsorship donations are used to protect native fish and wildlife, to promote water conservation, and to teach the next generation of river stewards. And that's a lot of the work that we do at the Trust, which I'll go into a little more. So we usually have, or we always have, a couple people who do the whole trip. We call them our principal paddlers. Those two young women in the first picture are some of our principal paddlers from last year, and the man with the dog is going to be a principal paddler this year on the American River. We've got some other folks lined up. But while several people do the whole trip, most people just come along for a day. And so there's all sorts of different opportunities for people to come and experience some piece of the watershed. One of the things that we really love about Paddle to the Sea is that it really does connect the many communities that are connected through the Tuolumne River. We have constituents up in the Sierra Nevada. We have people in the Central Valley, in the town of Modesto. We have people in San Francisco who drink Tuolumne River water. And there's a lot of cross-pollination. People from the Bay Area go up to the upper watershed, go to the Central Valley. People from the Valley come down to the Bay. And it gets people meeting each other and talking to each other and realizing how they're connected in ways that they might not think that they are. So the way I've structured this presentation is as a trip down the Tuolumne River. We're going to do a little slideshow as though we're going down the river. So we'll start up at Mount Lyell, which is the highest point in Yosemite National Park. And this is the Lyell Glacier, which is the headwaters of the Tuolumne River. And as it slowly melts in the spring and summer, we get little runoff into creeks and rivulets that start to form the Tuolumne River as it goes through Yosemite National Park here. You can see it's quite pristine. It's an amazing place. It's a beautiful place. the water is so pure that when we drink it from San Francisco, it doesn't have to be filtered. As you can see in the picture, it's just running over rocks. There's nothing for it to really pick up there. Some of the critters that we share the Tuolumne River watershed with, this is the foothill yellow-legged frog, which is, I think, a candidate for the endangered species list, and the Lyell salamander, named after Mount Lyell. Picture of Tuolumne Meadows as we're going through here, which is still going downstream. And then, of course, we get to the famous Hetch Hetchy Reservoir. So this is what it looks like today. That's what it looked like before the dam was built. And so you can sort of, if you look at the waterfalls there, you can kind of see the perspective is the same. This was obviously very controversial, building a reservoir inside of a national park. It was the idea of this man, Michael O'Shaughnessy, who the dam is named after, who I believe was the director of public works in San Francisco in the early 1900s. And it was fought quite vigorously by John Muir and the Sierra Club, who won at first and then lost after the 1906 earthquake and subsequent fires, and that led a lot of political momentum to the case for building a dam. San Francisco needed more water to put out fires, even though it was next to the Pacific Ocean. But, regardless, the system was built. This is a little schematic of the Hetch Hetchy service area and delivery system. Water is taken all the way from Hetch Hetchy, put through a series of pipes and tunnels and canals, and brought all the way to the Crystal Springs Reservoir over on the peninsula there. So it actually, when it leaves Hetch Hetchy, it doesn't ever go back in the river. It is in pipes and tunnels all the way to the Bay Area, where it serves the city of San Francisco as our primary source of tap water. And the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission also sells Tuolumne River water to 27 different entities on the peninsula and up into the southern part of Alameda County there. So all of those different entities get water from the PUC. They're collectively represented by an agency called BOSCA, the Bay Area Water Supply and Conservation Agency. And the BOSCA territory uses about two-thirds of the water taken out of Hetch Hetchy, and San Francisco uses about one-third. That's kind of how it breaks down. So several years ago, maybe 10 years ago now, maybe a little longer, the SFPUC was going to rebuild the Hetch Hetchy system. You might have heard about this. It was called the Water System Improvement Program. It was a $4.3 billion program to seismically retrofit this system that crosses four major fault lines across the state, which is very important because if there were a major earthquake, it could have been 60 days that San Francisco and the Bay Area would be without water. Attached to that program was a plan to take an additional 35 million gallons of water a day out of the Tuolumne River, which our organization fought vigorously and managed to, we won that campaign ultimately. In 2008, San Francisco agreed to actually cap water sales for the first time ever at current levels, which at that time was about 265 million gallons a day, and they capped it for at least 10 years. And promised to turn to water conservation and recycling instead. And so that worked out very well because it basically meant that the seismic upgrades could go forward. We didn't have to stall that with a lawsuit, and we managed to come to a negotiated settlement where they agreed to cap water sales for the first time. It was kind of historic. San Francisco has long maintained that they have water rights to take out something like 400 million gallons a day from the Tuolumne River. So for them to set a cap voluntarily was a big deal. And we're working hard now to sort of make sure that they stay under that cap. Interestingly, I'm not sure that there are 400 million gallons of water a day that you could take out of Hetch Hetchy. There's a problem with California water rights all over the place that they've been overpromised, right? So just because someone holds a water right doesn't mean much. Or doesn't mean means a lot, but it doesn't necessarily mean that water exists. So this is a little graph that shows, if you can see the black line is showing per capita water use, which is going down, and the red line showing that even as population has gone up, our water use has gone down. And that's been true for a while. It's true now. We're at currently about using about 220 million gallons a day, whereas we were at 265 in just 2008. So we feel good about that. We feel good about those trends. And we're working to do as much as we can to promote water conservation and recycling here in the Bay Area. San Francisco is about to build its first recycled water plant. It's kind of a shame that it's its first, but it's great that it's happening, which is going to be used to water Golden Gate Park. And that'll save 2 million gallons of water a day of Tuolumne River water. So a lot of what we do here in the Bay Area involves lobbying the SFPUC and BOSCA, encouraging BOSCA, where a lot of the water that they were planning to take out was really going to be used for their wholesale customers on the peninsula. There's a lot more landscaping down there, just due to the what people's houses are like in San Francisco. We don't have a lot of outdoor water use compared to most areas, and so a lot of that was to meet increased demand in the BOSCA territory. So we're working with BOSCA to incorporate water conservation and recycling, encouraging the SFPUC in their recycling program, and going to lots of public meetings and town hall hearings and city council meetings and that sort of thing. Lobbying also cities and their customers to support water conservation here in the Bay Area. So back to our tour down the river. So we're back to Hetch Hetchy here. This is the O'Shaughnessy Dam. And this is the river just downstream of it. You can see there's a lot less water, not surprisingly, which has a big impact on guys like these. These are rainbow trout that live between Hetch Hetchy and the next dam downstream, Don Pedro. Rainbow trout are the same fish that's also known as steelhead trout genetically, but rainbow trout, they have two different possible life histories. Rainbow trout stay in the river their whole life, but some of them can swim downstream, go out into the ocean, much like salmon do, and spend most of their life in the ocean and get actually much bigger. There's a lot more food in the ocean. And then they swim back upstream to spawn again. So our population in this section of the river is a landlocked population. These guys can't become steelhead trout because there's another dam downstream of them. But steelhead trout are an important endangered species in California. We do have them in the Tuolumne River, but not until you get downstream of the other dam. So we do have some tributaries bringing in more water, thankfully. This is Cherry Creek, which comes out of the immigrant wilderness and brings in a lot more water to the Tuolumne that's been dwindling. And that is actually the start of where you can whitewater raft the Tuolumne. Now, we don't start right with the Cherry Creek run because it's really difficult, but we start shortly downstream of there with the so this is where Paddle to the Sea begins officially. It's outside of Yosemite National Park. Can't boat on the Tuolumne in the park. But we're starting this year with a two-day overnight whitewater rafting trip on the Class 4 Tuolumne River. It's one of the, I've been told by many rafters who've rafted many rivers, and some of them in this room, that the Tuolumne is just one of the premier whitewater rafting experiences in California. It's one of the most pristine wilderness rivers that you could raft on. You will hardly see a street, you won't see a telephone pole, a house. It's pretty out there in the wilderness. You can really feel like you're out in the middle of nowhere. It's also, a challenging run. It's Class 4. It's a lot of fun. You can come on this trip even as a total beginner because you have professional guides who are running the trip for you and guiding the boat. And this section of the river has been designated wild and scenic, which means that no dams can ever be built there and that you can't do development within a quarter mile of the banks. And our organization was actually founded when there were a series of 5 dams proposed for this section of the river about 30 years ago. And we managed to stop those from being built and get this wild and scenic designation. So we're very happy about that. We'll also have a concert to kick off Paddle to the Sea that weekend up at a beautiful native plant nursery just in Groveland, California, sort of at the base of Yosemite. That's a great time if anybody wants to come up and join us for that, June 2nd. This is a tributary that comes into the Tuolumne River. We occasionally run it as part of Paddle to the Sea, but you can only run it certain times of year, and it's hard to know, it's hard to predict when that's going to happen because this Clavey River is one of only 3 undammed rivers in the Sierras. So it's really important as a reference watershed, and it's also quite a difficult run. I don't recommend you do this one unless you really know what you're doing. There's the Clavey River as it comes into the Tuolumne. And meanwhile, over on the American River, we're starting with the whitewater section as well. So we'll be doing a whitewater rafting trip on June 2nd and 3rd, coming down the Tuolumne coming down the American River. This is a very different whitewater run, but also a lot of fun. It's not quite the pristine wilderness experience of the Tuolumne, but it's a slightly easier run. It's slightly more accessible, and it's Class 3, and it's just a lot of fun. And we're going to be doing those as day trips, so you can do both days and do a camp out, or you can just come on one day. And this is a great deal. This would cost about $150 if you're going to do it with a professional company. You can come on Paddle to the Sea for $30 a day. So going back to our tour down the Tuolumne River, here's the sort of end of the whitewater run on the Tuolumne as we're coming into Don Pedro Reservoir. And this is where a lot of our Let It Flow campaign that I mentioned briefly is centered right now. This reservoir holds, 900,000 acre feet of water?
2.03 million.
Oh, sorry. I got it all wrong.
2.03 million acre feet
of water. So Don Pedro is a bigger dam than, or bigger reservoir rather than Hetch Hetchy. Of all the water that gets taken out of the Tuolumne River, about 80% of it is diverted here. About 20% goes to San Francisco, and the other 80% goes mostly to agricultural interests in the Central Valley, some of it to urban use in Modesto as well. This is really where there's a lot of low-hanging fruit. As we talked about earlier, San Francisco has been doing a lot of water conservation. It's been ramping up their water recycling programs. The Central Valley has had to do little to none of that. There's no laws enforcing water conservation. They only recently started measuring how much water is being used. So, and when you just think that this is where 80% of the water that's coming out of the river is going, it seems like you're going to have to do some conservation there to put more water back in the river. And that's really what's needed. Only right now, 16% of the natural flow down the Tuolumne River is mandated to come down for the benefit of fish and wildlife downstream. There are huge problems in the lower Tuolumne River past this dam in terms of water quality, in terms of recreation, and then in terms of fish and wildlife. Downstream of this dam, we have our salmon population, which has been dwindling to scary numbers. It's been at or under 1,000, like right around or under 1,000 fish coming back for the last 7 years. Salmon can kind of go in these boom and bust cycles, but that's a really long time for it to be so low. 12 years ago in 2000, we had 20,000 fish. And so this feels like really teetering at the brink, you know, and what's really needed to get those numbers back up so that we have a sustainable, healthy salmon population is for more water to be coming down the river. That's sort of, everybody knows that. That's, everybody agrees that that's what has to happen. When I say everybody, I mean environmentalists, our agencies that are charged with protecting these fish and that sort of thing. The dam owners and operators might disagree. Meanwhile, what's happening on the Tuolumne is the relicensing of this dam. So this is a once-in-50-year opportunity to basically renegotiate how the dam's operated. The dam has to get a new license to operate. Their license is up in 2016. It's a 5-year process to do that, so we've been about a year into this process. And basically, if you think about it, when the dam last got a license, it was 1966. So it was before the modern environmental age. We didn't have an Endangered Species Act. We didn't have a Clean Water Act. We didn't have a National Environmental Policy Act. This is our once-in-a-lifetime chance to enforce those laws for the next 30 to 50 years, which will be the term of the next license. So it's a big deal. The major players in this process are the Modesto and Turlock Irrigation Districts, who own and operate that dam, and the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, whose workings are very tied in with MID and TID. And then a number of state and federal resource agencies like the Department of Fish and Game, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the National Marine Fisheries Service, and the State Water Resources Control Board. And then there are also stakeholder groups like Tuolumne River Trust and many other environmental groups that are participating in this process. And through that, we're really hoping to force a lot higher flows to come down the Tuolumne River, the lower Tuolumne, for the benefit of fish and wildlife and water quality and recreation, a whole host of reasons. So far, we've got this big coalition of groups that are working on this. We've got a lot of legal representation that we've been able to secure. We've been coordinating with the resource agencies in developing a study plan. So there's a whole study period as part of this 5-year process. And we were able to generate a huge turnout for the scoping hearing that happened, where we're trying to make sure that we're not just looking immediately downstream of the dam, but thinking about the effects that it's having all the way out to the ocean, the vast amount of water that's being held back from the Tuolumne. So go back to our little tour down the river. Here's the lower Tuolumne River, still quite beautiful, even though it doesn't have as much water as it ought to. And this is where we start our nice flatwater section of Paddle to the Sea. So this is where we get lots and lots of people out to go canoeing. We do some rafts. These are all easy class one stretches of the river, so there's no rapids. It's just a nice, easy float down a beautiful river that still has quite the riparian corridor. It's a really beautiful place to go through. There's trees all along the river, birds, wildlife. I had a kayaker who was a world-class kayaker who did the entire trip 1 year, but he's been all over the world, tell us that it was this lower Tuolumne River was one of his favorite sections ever of any river. I want to take a minute here to talk about another issue that's going to affect the lower Tuolumne River, and that's a proposed water transfer. The Modesto Irrigation District is right now in talks to sell water to San Francisco, to the SFPUC. The Tuolumne River Trust is opposing this sale. It seems like really bad timing for us, although what's really interesting about it is that MID, for the first time in our memory, is actually saying that they have extra water that they could do something with, that they could sell, for example. Now, in the FERC process, they're telling us they don't have any extra water, they can't afford a single drop to go down the river, but they are planning to maybe sell 2 million gallons a day to San Francisco. So it's exciting that they are thinking about how they could conserve water and where they could find extra water, but we don't want that to go to San Francisco, where, as I've just recently told you, our water use is down. We don't think that San Francisco needs it. We also don't think that San Francisco should just keep turning to taking water out of wild and scenic river when they could be doing other things instead. So, water from the Tuolumne might be in many cases considered cheaper than other alternatives, than a recycled water plant and that sort of thing. In this case, that's a little bit up in the air, whether it actually is cheaper, because we'd be paying $700 an acre foot for water that we would only use in about once every 3 years, which means we'd actually be paying something like $2,100 an acre foot, which actually makes it more expensive than recycled water options. But regardless, they shouldn't be looking to the Tuolumne. We should be looking elsewhere. So the environmental review for this project is outdated. There's new data that wasn't included that would need to be if they were going to go forward with something like this. Like I said, water use in the Bay Area is down. And basically, MID, we also sort of contend, doesn't know how much water they have to play with, because this FERC process, which hopefully will be over in a couple of years, we actually think that it's going to force them to release a lot more water into the river. So we're trying to convince them, don't sell it until you know how much you have to play with. And if you find some in the meantime, let's put it down the river for the fish. So back to pictures of Paddle to the Sea trips. So these are some of the canoeing trips, some of the wildlife you might see along the way when you come out on the river with us and learn all about these things in even greater detail. These are some pictures of work that we do along the lower Tuolumne. We have a program that takes fourth graders out at the river and teaches them restoration activities and about river ecology. As Paddle to the Sea passes through Modesto, we're going to have a series of riverside parties on those dates there, June 14th, 15th, 16th. And then meanwhile, over on the American River, we're going to be rafting and kayaking down the American River Parkway and the Sacramento River. So once again, this is sort of after the whitewater, after we cross the reservoirs, which you don't want to come on that day because that's not a fun day at all, long slog of flat water. But as we go through the American River Parkway, it's a great chance for us to, especially for our Tuolumne River constituents, to see what we could have in say, the town of Modesto. The Tuolumne River Trust has been working for a decade on trying to create the Lower Tuolumne River Parkway, which is a series of parks and restoration sites that are a mosaic of like 27 different sites along the Lower Tuolumne that would sort of help connect riparian areas, help create a canoe trail, public access. The American River Parkway is the model for this, and it's a really well done, the river goes right through the city and you would never know it, and they have these well-utilized and well-loved parks the whole way along it. And so it's a great chance to highlight that American River Parkway. And then we'll go into the Sacramento River. On June 18th, we'd love to invite you to a river rally. Paddle to the Sea is going to pass within 8 blocks of the state capitol, so we couldn't resist. We're going to pull out the kayaks and march, process up the state, the Capitol Mall to the steps of the Capitol and have a rally where we're going to demand that the State Water Board set really high standards for flow in the San Joaquin, which will have to come from the Tuolumne. So it'll be great. This is a picture of where the Tuolumne River and the San Joaquin meet. So the Tuolumne River goes into the San Joaquin, and that's the confluence there. And you can see, I don't think the pointer, works. But there are two big parcels of land there, kind of right at the confluence. Can you point to them, Eric?
I can't.
That it's that dark green one. I think, yeah.
All of
this. Oh, it's all of that. Okay. So that area is called Dos Rios. And this has been a project that the Tuolumne River Trust has been working on for 10 years, is to buy a is to buy that land and restore it to floodplain. It's a really important spot. It's two, you know, it touches two major rivers here, the Tuolumne and the San Joaquin. And it all used to be floodplain, and then, of course, was converted into agricultural land that still floods periodically. And so after big floods the owners have been convinced to sell it, and we have to put together $25 million to buy that piece of land, but then we can restore it for all sorts of habitat. Here's a picture.
For a sense of scale, it's 50% larger than Golden Gate Park, and it's larger than the Presidio by about 100 acres.
It's amazing.
A nice chunk of habitat.
So what we'd want to do there, floodplain is really important habitat for salmon and for all sorts of other things, too. It's great for all sorts of birds and other fish as well. But salmon particularly, especially as those little baby fish are on their way out to the ocean, they need places to stop, to hide, to rest, and to eat. Because if they are this big when they enter the ocean, they might not make it. But if they're this big, they have a much better chance of surviving and making it back to the river. So if you can see that picture there, that's from another place where we did this. There was another site called the Big Bend Restoration Site where we did something similar. We bought a conservation easement, notched the old levees that used to channelize the river and keep it all flowing quickly and not spreading out into the floodplain. Now in high flows, the water can get over into this floodplain habitat, create this great area with all the plants and reeds and things like that. It creates lots of cover for the fish to hide from birds and other predators in. It keeps the water cool, all of that shade, and just creates great habitat for them to hang out and eat and get nice and big. And that's a little baby salmon from Big Bend there.
You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program, Paddle to the Sea, from the Hacieras to the San Francisco Bay. And we have speaking right now Jesse Rader, who's describing this wonderful trip down the Tuolumne River. And having joined us for our discussion now is Eric Wesselman. Welcome, Eric.
So Paddle to the Sea then goes on as we go through the San Joaquin River and then come into the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta, which is the largest estuary in the west coast of the Americas. It's a really important place ecologically. It's a really important place politically. Nobody knows where it is, it turns out, or that much about it, but unless we really follow California water, because it is really the center of almost everything. And the Delta is a really important place for the survival of many species utilized by tons of fish and birds, very important for salmon. This is where the little baby fish on their way out to the ocean change their whole bodies, morph into saltwater-going fish. It's basically they have to change almost every cell in their body so that instead of trying to keep salt in, they're trying to keep salt out. It's a metamorphosis on the scale of a caterpillar becoming a butterfly, these fish when they go out to sea. So it's a really important place. It's been very dewatered. There's a lot of talk that the salmon crash all up and down California. A lot of it could be attributed to an increase in water diversions that have come out of the Delta in the last couple of years. There's a lot of talk often in the Delta about cutting back on exports, which is probably an important piece of the puzzle. But another piece is adding inflow. You know, that's where the tributaries and rivers like the Tuolumne can really play a huge part in the Delta. The Delta is starved of a lot of the water that it would have normally received because it's being diverted further upstream. The Tuolumne River is the largest tributary to the San Joaquin, and there's two major rivers that go into the Delta. It's the Sacramento and the San Joaquin. So we go through the Delta. We start going it's a more difficult paddle. Instead of a nice, easy canoe trip, we're talking about a 20-25 mile kayak through tides and winds and things like that. So if you're into more of an athletic challenge, this is the place for you. We have sailboats coming along to support our kayakers, and the kayakers camp out on the sailboats overnight. So if anybody has a sailboat that they want to bring along as well, we'd appreciate that. Here in the Delta, as I was saying before, the FERC relicensing will probably benefit the Delta. And there's some other processes that are playing in as well that the Tuolumne River Trust is following closely and playing a part in. There are a number of processes going on around the Delta that you probably hear about. There's the Bay Delta Conservation Plan. The one that we're especially excited about is the State Water Board is setting new flow and salinity requirements for the San Joaquin and the South Delta. They're doing this on the Sacramento as well, but first they're going to do the southern part of the Delta and the San Joaquin. Those new requirements will be binding, which means that once the State Water Board says we need X amount of water, we need X amount of flow in the San Joaquin and South Delta, then they have to go get it. And there's kind of nowhere for them to go get it from except the tributaries, which are the Tuolumne, the Stanislaus, the Merced, and I guess the San Joaquin upstream of the dam itself. Right now, only the Stanislaus is on the hook for all Delta water quality standards. This was something that was set up many years ago where only the state and federal water projects had to contribute water to the Delta. It doesn't necessarily make sense from a hydrological or an ecological point of view. We'd like to see the Tuolumne responsible for some of the water in the Delta. That will help the Tuolumne, it will help the San Joaquin, and it will help the Delta. So we're paying a lot of attention to that. Our Let It Flow campaign is really going to focus on that some during Paddle to the Sea, on asking the State Water Board to set really high standards. They're actually looking at setting standards that are based on a percentage of unimpaired flow. They've looked at 20%, 40%, 60%. We think this is a great approach. It's an approach that makes sense ecologically and hydrologically, base it on, you know, some percentage of what would have been there. So we're going through the Delta June 22nd through 25th. Again, sailboats, fast kayaks, if you're into that. This is a favorite picture of ours because you can see all the way from the snow-covered mountains in the Sierra out to the Delta, through the San Francisco Bay, over to San Francisco, where we use all that Tuolumne River water to water the sidewalk. Oh, wait. That's my next slide. and so, you know, again, back in San Francisco, we finish out Paddle to the Sea with sea kayaking around the beautiful San Francisco waterfront here. This is a gorgeous paddle if you want to come out on the bay and help us finish out the trip. It's really fun, beautiful paddle. And as I was saying, you know, we're here in the Bay Area still working as much as we can to promote water conservation. You know, things like helping the PUC pass ordinances that mandate low-flow toilets and showerheads and things like that. And as we talked about already, recycled water. So just a few more slides of the beautiful views you can see on this short little paddle around the bay as we come into Aquatic Park and have our big grand finale party, which is going to be on Saturday, June 30th. You're all invited. So I'll just cap it off a little bit here with some information about how to participate in Paddle to the Sea in case you're interested. So there's one trip that's a little more expensive, and that's that overnight Tuolumne River rafting trip. And if you want to come on that, it's $362, and that's because we're having a professional company lead the trip. Everything else, anything else you want to come along for, is $30 a day, $15 if you're already a member of the trust. And then we ask everybody to try to raise at least $60 through the paddle-a-thon. And most people find that's pretty easy. That's like three people giving you $20. And then there's prizes if you raise more than that. So we hope you'll come along, form a team, bring your kids, come visit the river that you probably, you know, drink every day and makes up 70% of your body, and meet the other people that you're connected to. And we'll just say a quick thank you to our sponsors. And if you have any questions about Paddle to the Sea, our website is paddletothesea.org. That's our phone number. If you call it, you'll get to talk to me. And I'm going to turn it over to Eric.
You're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program, Paddle to the Sea, from the High Sierras to the San Francisco Bay on the Great Tuolumne River. You've just heard from Jesse Rader, who's told us all about doing the river, and it looks wonderful. It's a great trip. And Eric's going to talk to us now about more things that are happening. Eric Wesselman is the executive director of the Tuolumne River Trust. Thank you, Eric.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for coming out tonight to hear all about this stuff. And Anne, thank you so much for organizing this this event. It's really a special opportunity to talk about a place and a river that we love. So a wise person once told me that you can't protect a place if you can't name it. And so we have a challenge with Tuolumne. Tuolumne, how do you say Tuolumne? So right there, we have an interesting challenge before us. But it's really through what we've decided is that as a fundamental strategic approach at the Tuolumne River Trust, we want to connect people to the river that they depend on. So get them out to the river, the resource that they rely on, so they can get to know it, enjoy it, learn about it. And so more than just naming it, they actually know a thing or two about it and some of the issues, the opportunities and challenges facing the river that we rely on, that's going to set us up for essentially the next generation of river stewards. So a broader constituency that can come out and help us to protect and restore this incredible place and this river. And we've been doing this now for river-related recreation for many years, over a decade now, getting people out hiking and canoe trips, fall canoe trips, canoeing with, well, the salmon are coming upstream, we're canoeing downstream. But it really took off with Paddle to the Sea, this wacky idea that originally was to draw attention to the need to have a wild and scenic Claby River. The Claby, as you may have already heard, is this incredible tributary to the Tuolumne that has been under the threat of development, hydropower development, for many, many years. And some crazy kayakers thought, we should kayak that and then just keep going all the way to San Francisco to draw attention to it. And Jesse and I and a few other people at the Trust kind of said, that's an interesting idea. And I think that's something actually we should go bigger, though. We should go a lot bigger. We should use this as an opportunity, not just to do as a publicity stunt, but as a way to really engage people in a much bigger and more fundamental way. And beyond just connecting people to the river and having fun on the river and developing that constituency that way, it's connecting people to each other as well and demonstrating how we're all interconnected and dependent, not just on the river, but on each other as well. So it starts to connect people in the Bay Area to the agricultural, culturally different, demographically different areas in the San Joaquin Valley, right? So we talk about red state and blue states all the time in this country, but we've got red counties and blue counties here in California, and this river spans them, right, perfectly. So you've got from the Sierras and the Sierra foothills, which is an interesting community, down to the San Joaquin Valley into the Bay Area, very different cultures and demographics and politics. And so the river connects us. So it connects that fly fisher. You may have used this very line earlier, but it connects that fly fisher up in Tuolumne Meadows to the rancher downstream in the foothills to the grower, the almond grower and orchard tenders and agricultural workers in the San Joaquin Valley, onto the folks living and drinking the water here in San Francisco, and the recreational and commercial salmon fishers and those operations. And this event really kind of demonstrates, it's a very visible way of showing that connection and engaging people in this. And that just sets the stage for better stewardship. And it creates a platform that we can build on to improve water conservation, to advance all the programs that Jesse just outlined, to advance water conservation in urban and rural areas, to advance river protection and restoration activities, and you name it, and educational and just environmental education opportunities that go beyond the river. So it starts to use the river as a teaching moment or teaching opportunity or tool. So much like climate change does. So how do you? We all talk about climate change. Look at it's such a big global issue, and how is it going to affect me? We talk about sea level rise, maybe, but there's the river actually is a great way to talk about climate change as well. And so it leads to other issues because of the decreasing reliance on Sierra rivers and the snowpack impacts of climate. Right. So it's a great way to again, connect people to the river and then use it as a branch to other issues of environmental stewardship and activism. So this year in particular is really kind of unique in a few different ways. As Jesse mentioned, we're adding rivers. So it's coming. Paddle to the Sea is coming to a river closer to you. And I think that's helpful, especially when, not everyone, we're not going to get everybody to come out to the Tuolumne River out at LaGrange, where I happen to be today, and canoeing down the lower Tuolumne. But a lot of people will. But if we add, the American River, we can get even more people out there. And so this is a kind of a pilot, test case scenario to see how that works and if we can engage more people in this and broaden that base out even more. Another way it's unique is that it's coming at a time which is really advantageous, I think. This is, I've been working on Western water issues and Delta, San Francisco Bay Delta policy for, I like to say since the turn of the century, which, it was 2000. So so it's a while. It's not that long. But certainly there are other people that have been working on it for a much longer period of time. But I've never seen a confluence of opportunities like this. So what Jesse mentioned is the State Water Board setting these flow criteria, these flow standards for inflow and outflow to the San Francisco Bay Delta, the largest estuary on the west coast of North and South America. You know, hugely important opportunity. If they're going to set those standards, if they set them right, and it's looking like they're heading in the right direction, that'll change the game completely. And they're looking for the first time to the role that tributaries play, that all the tributaries that come into the San Francisco Bay Delta can play in meeting those water quality standards. Because that's the key, is you got to have more fresh water inflow. You know, it's a little cynical, but dilution is the solution. And so and so far they have not been tapping all the tributaries. So the Tuolumne, water purveyors in the Tuolumne, the oldest irrigation districts in the state, have been off the hook. This SFPUC, which diverts water from the Tuolumne, obviously, has been off the hook. Same thing on the Merced River, where you've got the Merced Irrigation District. So that, though, is all happening at the same time as the relicensing proceedings that Jesse mentioned. So New Don Pedro Dam, the largest dam on the Tuolumne, and I think it's the fifth largest dam and reservoir in the state, is going through this relicensing process. So it's an opportunity to intervene to change the rules for how that dam is managed. And the same thing is happening one river south, the Merced River. So both of the rivers that come out of Yosemite National Park and the biggest dams on those rivers are going through relicensing at almost the exact same time. And that's happening at the same time as this Delta water proceeding. Boom, that's a trifecta. And so the irrigation districts know this, and they get it. They know what they're doing. And they've opened up a channel of communication with us. So they're coming to us saying, yeah, we probably should talk. There are some issues here that we need to address. And they would call it, they were calling it the many arrows pointed at their back. and they're calling it that, they're calling it many bites at the apple. And I see their point. They're looking at, you know, the regulatory uncertainty, and they've got these many bites coming at the apple, where, many regulatory proceedings where water could be taken from the farmers, they would argue, and put back in the river. I think there are win-win solutions where we can increase efficiency and get the same agricultural productivity and have a healthier river system at the same time. But the fact that so I'm interested in having that conversation, maybe. Depends on what's all on the table. And if we can look at some collaborative opportunities, and then it's not just about flow, but it's really about a basin-wide approach. And, you know, as I said at the beginning, as John Muir said, you know, everything is interconnected, right? So, and that's true. So you look at the San Joaquin Basin, the broader watershed, you know, it's all interconnected. If we have an opportunity here to reoperate dams and improve conditions so that we can really play with all the levers and bells and whistles and tools and flip switches and try to dial it in the best we can, that's a unique opportunity that I think is worth exploring, but we will see. And the other path, by the way, so that's a perilous path because it could lead to compromise and settlement and maybe we leave too much on the table. You know, that there's risks and opportunities. The other approach is to go through these regulatory proceedings one by one that are happening overlapping at the same time, and then there's litigation on each one. So each one is litigated. So that's the bad case scenario in that. And right now we're kind of at a fork in the road, frankly, as to which way we're going to go, and we're weighing our options, and we will see. So it could be many years if we go down that other path to when we actually see something change tangibly, you know, that something happens on the river, you know, and like we saw with the San Joaquin settlement, right? So it was 18 years ago, probably 20 by now, that litigation first started to rewater the San Joaquin River. 18 years of litigation on and off, settlement talks on and off, and then boom, finally they're getting to water, and then Congressman Nunez comes in and bam, tries to dismantle the whole thing in Congress, you know. So, you know, it's, everything's difficult, but if we see an opportunity to get some real benefits for the river in the shorter term, that's an interesting avenue to pursue. And so I should stop there, though, and just thank you all again for coming, because I want to hear, yeah, we should get to questions.
Again, you're listening for our radio audience to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program, Paddle to the Sea, about the Tuolumne River. I wanted to add a couple of comments. One is that I've been a San Franciscan for a long, long time and have had the great joy of going up to a family camp called Camp Mather. Actually, we are a four-generation family at Camp Mather now, so I somehow knew about the Tuolumne before I met the Tuolumne River Trust. Now I know a lot more. But it always annoyed me that I would come back to San Francisco and I would hear that nothing about where the water came from all the people I knew, or I'd hear about Hetch Hetchy water. So I have this private campaign that anyone who says Hetch Hetchy water gets from me this tirade about, do you know it's a river? Do you know it's the Tuolumne River? That's the water we drink in San Francisco. And yes, indeed, here at the Commonwealth Club, we drink Tuolumne water, and we use the carafes now. We've done that for a number of years in order to have our water come directly from the Tuolumne River and not through the long, involved environmental process that produces other kind of water in the city. So just to share with you that the river means a lot for me, just not only because of my family and the beautiful river, but also because it is the water that we live by here in this city, a city that I really love. So we, on that note, so don't you dare tell me that this water comes from the Hetch Hetchy. You'll get a long lecture. We're going to do our questions by using our audience mic, and what we'll do is pass it around, and I think I mentioned earlier, be sure and speak into the mic, and a great friend of mine is going to do that for us. I have to speak in the mic, is going to do that for us now. This is Carol DiBenedetti, and Carol is one of our emeritus members of the Environment and Natural Resources Forum here at the Commonwealth Club.
Hi. I have a statement. First, I thought if Bosca could change its name to Basta, that might help us a little bit. Another one is Jared Huffman helping at all on this project, or is there a way that he could be helping? Last piece is how could this affect the problem of this desal? That's what I'm really worried about. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, Jared's been helpful in any number of ways. I think Jared's probably, I mean, I'm sure that he's been helpful in a bunch of ways that I don't know about. I worked with Jared before he was elected to office when he was at NRDC, and I know he's doing a lot of good stuff, for sure. I have no doubt about that. And specifically, with the State Water Board proceeding and the water quality standards, he's tracking what's going on. He knows, and he's involved. And legislatively, I'm not aware of any. He's involved in the Bay Delta Conservation Planning process and aware of that. But that's a little bit parallel and aside from the kinds of issues we've been talking about tonight. But the one thing that we kind of want Jared to do, actually, specifically, is come to our rally in Sacramento. And that would be one thing that I think would be really great, because he has been a champion for rivers and the environment in California. And if he could come join us as we pull out, take out our canoes and kayaks at the end of Capitol Mall and proceed on up to the steps of the Capitol and have him join us and at the same time going on record supporting strong water quality standards coming out of the State Water Board, which they'll all be considering over the summer and make a decision in the fall. That would just be perfect. Let's see, on the desal, time and time again, I mean, when San Francisco tried to divert more water from the Tuolumne back around 2004, 2005, and then we ended up stopping that in 2008, they had these demand projections that were up here, and we said, that sounds silly, and we analyzed it, and we did the technical work on that, and found that that's way overinflated, and here's why. We gave the why and found the flaws in their methodology, and there were just a bunch. So it's like someone asks you, how much money do you need this year? What are you going to say? You know what I mean? Like, you're going to give them a big number, probably. I mean, not everybody, but you might inflate it a little bit. You might embellish it and blow it up a little bit because you want to have a cushion, right? Same thing with water supply purveyors. And so what we came back and then said at the same time is that there's tons you can do on the water use efficiency and conservation side. So invest in that, get your demand projections right, and then come talk to us about any needs to take more water off the Tuolumne. All right, then the desal. Again, so desal is just another way of getting more water, like taking water off the Tuolumne. So it's not an either or. That's a ridiculous false choice to say that we need either we're going to take it from the Tuolumne, the Wild and Scenic River that you love so much, or we're going to build a big desal plant in the bay. Like, that's not it at all. Their demand, I would still contest. Well, demand went down, has gone down when they were projecting that it was going to keep going up. So it either stayed flat or gone down in the Bay Area, the Bosca members. So I'm not really concerned about needing this. But, down the road, 30, 40, 50 years from now, sure, we can start looking at this project down the road. But I don't see any urgent need to do this.
Can you please comment on the position of the San Francisco PUC with regard to the current relicensing of Don Pedro Dam?
Can I take this?
Sure.
So I don't know that I can exactly comment on their position, but it's a really interesting question, and let me talk about that a little bit, and we'll see if we can get to it. We didn't go into this a lot in the presentation, but there's an interesting way that San Francisco is going to play a huge role in the relicensing of Don Pedro Dam, a dam that they don't own or really control, but that they did help pay for half of. And when, in 1966 or whenever it was built, San Francisco put up 51% of the money, they also signed an agreement that's called the Fourth Agreement that says that San Francisco will be responsible for 51% of whatever FERC orders. Whoever signed that, nobody really knows who signed that anymore, but nobody's very happy with that person these days. It's a terrible deal for San Francisco. And what it really says is that San Francisco, say they require a lot more water to be released, that 51% of that has to come out of San Francisco. Now, San Francisco paid for a part of the dam and agreed to this because they get a water bank. So they can't. San Francisco has to Modesto and Turlock have senior water rights. Their water rights are older than San Francisco's, which means that at certain times of the year, there's not enough water for San Francisco to release into the middle stretch of the Tuolumne to meet the right that the downstream users have every day. So instead, they bank it. And so what they can do is in the springtime when there's a lot of water, they can release more than they're required to and keep it in Don Pedro, basically. And then on times in the summer when there's not enough water for them to release and keep Hetch Hetchy full, then Modesto and Turlock can get their share out of the bank. So it's this kind of complicated arrangement that now has San Francisco on the hook for whatever FERC orders. We already said San Francisco only uses about 20% of the water. Modesto and Turlock use about 80%. San Francisco doesn't have the water to give up. We're going to be asking for a lot. The state and federal resource agencies are asking for a lot of water. A lot more water needs to go down the river. Only 16% is designated for fish and wildlife right now. That's terrible. we want 60% of the water staying in the river. But that water probably isn't going to come out of San Francisco. So it may end up in some sort of place where San Francisco will pay Modesto and Turlock to release water. That's what happened with a little thing that happened. There was a procedure in 1995 that might give some precursor to what might come out of this. Other than that, we bring it up all the time and can't ever really get San Francisco to say what their plan is. Back to your question, Cindy, about what is San Francisco thinking about this. We know that their lawyers are at every meeting. We know that they're following it as closely as anyone else, and they have as much or more in some, it could be seen at stake as Modesto and Turlock. They kind of keep quiet about that, and nobody's really sure how it's going to play out, although the likely scenario is that they'll end up paying for a lot of it.
I think the challenging thing from our perspective has been that the PUC has kind of been hanging there. They said that, this fourth agreement is in place. We have to do 51% of the water or the money to pay for the water. Like, oh, boy, well, we're against it, right? So they've dug in, in opposition, which is boxing themselves in. And I think there's a better approach for them. One is to so let's figure out a way to get out of the fourth agreement, and there are some ways to do it. I'm sure there are some ways to do it. These things, it could be renegotiated for sure. There obviously that's not easy, but in a settlement proceeding, they're not necessarily bound. If it's going to FERC and it's going through the regulatory proceeding, then the contract stands. But in a settlement process, we can talk about that. And in the same time, I'm not sure the fourth agreement applies to the state water board proceeding. So if the state water board if this gets hammered out at the state water board level, and then and not at the FERC level, or if the things, all this comes together in this one big bite at the apple that I was talking about, then it's very conceivable that that goes away or could be negotiated in a different way.
Mona Lake is getting deeper every year, and the ladies that saved the bay made the bay bigger every year. So why can't we develop a strategy where we get 5% more flow in every river in the state every year? Oftentimes we're on defense, mm-hmm. and I keep thinking we could go on offense.
Mm-hmm. Matt? I think it's a, you know, it's not a, it's a good plan. And, you know, one of the interesting things about water conservation, or about getting more water in the river, is that there's really these like two steps to it, which ought to be, but aren't necessarily related, where, you know, we'd like to think that if we conserve water, then that water is going to stay in the river for the fish. And it just doesn't quite work out that way. Often when we conserve water, that means more water is going to sit behind a reservoir. And so, now, ultimately, it does, you know, right? Water conservation in general is the answer. But there are, this other mechanism is needed to force the dam operators to release that water. And so that's why, you know, we're working both on the water conservation side in urban use and also in agricultural use, but then also on the regulatory side, where we have to have those FERC relicensings, we have to have the, you know, PUC adopt a cap on water sales or something to make sure that that water is actually going to be released into the river. And the relicensing is a big way to do that. The problem with that is it comes up once every 50 years. It's not a 5% every scenario rule. That's not the way the rules have been set up. That said, I mean, I think there's creative things to think about there. You know, we've talked about it would be great to have an environmental water fund where people could, you know, we could raise money to buy water to release or something into the river, or, you know, there are those kinds of ideas. I mean, I think it's a good campaign. There's just some figuring out of how to force it to happen.
We drew up plans a few years ago for a campaign for 50-50, that it, we ought to have at least 50% of the natural flow in the river. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, that's just fair, right? Like, people get 50, the river and the critters that depend on it get 50. You know, and so, and it turns out that, I mean, now the State Water Board is looking at this 20, 40, 60% of unimpaired flow. Well, 50% is probably right about right. So it's kind of interesting. But I think we are going on the offensive because we're no longer saying, oh, please don't build more dams or please don't divert more water. We're saying, put water back in. Like, we're done with stopping the bad stuff from happening. And now we're turning back from the brink and saying, now it's time to find a way to put more water back in the river. I think we're trying to do it, and we're working on it. And hopefully we'll, yeah, I think we have a really good shot at getting there.
I know water conservation is very important. It's probably the most important part. I was wondering if you were aware that San Jose Water Company is on the verge of doubling their price of household water because of conservation efforts.
I mean, is that the whole, that's a fact that they're raising the rates solely because of conservation?
That's their excuse.
Go ahead. Yeah, you know Boscombe.
Well, there is a dilemma in that water use a lot of the time, your water agencies make money by the amount of water that they sell. So for them to encourage conservation hurts their bottom line. And it's a big problem. And I think it's probably a little disingenuous to say that water rates are going up just because of conservation. It's probably because of all sorts of things like infrastructure rebuilds and exactly.
It's the WESIP.
It's actually probably the Water System Improvement Program, that $4.3 billion capital improvement program. That's probably what it is that they're paying for. But it is true that conservation can hurt in that way. And, I mean, there's Peter Dreckmeyer, who's on our staff, likes to talk about decoupling a lot. That says it's a really important, you know, it'd be good to separate that out the way they've done with energy so that the agencies that provide water aren't incentivized against conservation.
Unfortunately, we have reached that point in our program where we have time for one last question, if anyone has a question, even a quick question, and our final comments. So let's take that last question first.
I just have one comment real quick, and that is that Marin is talking about the same thing in terms of, but I don't see them paying their the staff any less. In fact, they're all getting pay raises, so that's kind of the problem, I think.
Is there a question in that, or should we just go to final comments?
Go to another final question.
One final question.
Questions?
Well, we want to thank the audience. They're really very provocative comments and questions, and that's really wonderful and why we are here at the Commonwealth Club, to really have that kind of discussion and those kinds of questions. And we'd like to have both of our speakers tonight make their final comments.
I hadn't thought about final comments.
Come on, paddle to the sea. It's all of June, and you can, like I said, there's a piece for you. Beginners are welcome on just about every leg. So if whitewater rafting is your adventure versus, flatwater canoeing or sea kayaking in the bay, we would love to have you come along and participate and meet your river.
Yeah, meet your river, exactly. Yeah, thank you all for coming. This has been great. So I'm happy to stick around for any questions or conversation after the formal close here. So I would just wrap with that. And come get to know your river.
And I'd like to add, don't forget, there is a big party here in San Francisco when the paddlers reach San Francisco and come across the bay. So go to the website, watch for the date, and go to the party. The party is really wonderful.
June 30th,
okay.
And if you talk to us after, we'll tell you which were our favorite days.
Oh, that's even better, right? So tonight I want to thank the Tuolumne River Trust and Jesse and Eric for being with us and all of you. We also want to thank our audiences here and on radio, television, and the Internet. I'm Ann Clark, and this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating more than 109 years of enlightened discussion as we head tonight, is formally adjourned.